9 AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is the Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good morning, Rutherford County. I have Mr. Miles Lane on. I guess it should be Dr. Lane. I'm not sure how that title goes.
I'll answer to most anything.
Yeah. He's one of our great physical enthusiasts. He goes over to the Y every day and pumps iron and does all those things to, I guess, so he can maintain his strength dealing with all those massive animals he has to deal with every day.
Just running away from what's chasing all of us, Truman, just like you do.
Yeah, somebody asked me, why do you work out so hard? I said, because somebody might be right behind me.
That's exactly right. He's there somewhere.
And the first part of our show, and Miles' show, is brought to you by Murfreesboro Automotive. And when you need car repairs, you want someone you can trust. Murfreesboro Automotive is that place. Chuck Haynes has a staff of certified technicians that can fix anything. From the simple oil change to major auto repair, Murfreesboro Automotive is the only place you need. Murfreesboro Automotive. Turn off Broad between Chewy's and Chili's onto Ridgely Road. Well, since you're going to put your ears on, I guess I will too, Miles. You know, I have been going to you for a number of years, and one thing that's always really intrigues me is how much you care for the animals that we bring in and how much you relate to each of the pet owners. And I remember a special occasion where I had to bring in one of my animals to be euthanized, and then she had already gotten where she couldn't do anything, and you guys were so kind, and you even sent a sympathy card afterwards. And you know, somebody like me, it's hard for me to get emotional on something like that, but when you become a pet becomes part of your family, it's different.
I think that you nailed it right there, Truman, that pets over their lifetime become part of the family, and probably the greatest challenge that we have in our occupation is to know when you are helping the animal and helping the family by providing that service. And it changes with each family, and it changes with each individual patient. And we just try to use as much empathy as we can and compassion as we can, and provide that service for the pet and the family.
Now, I have seen on the outside your business change a lot, because many years ago, you guys took care of more of the larger animals. I mean, you're talking about the cows and the horses and those type pigs.
Yeah, that's correct. And and we're coming up on our 48th year.
Mm-hmm. And that's unbelievable.
And since Dr. Brogel started the practice in 1964, and it was primarily a food animal equine practice to begin with, and about two-thirds of the practice is made up of those animals, and one-third was companion animal. And as the demographics of the county have changed over the years, like everybody knows, the veterinary business has changed as well. And when we finally stopped seeing large animals, it was like 10% versus 90% being companion animals. And you know, the farms are mostly gone, and the walking horse industry is taking a pretty good hit the last 10 years or so. And you hate to see those types of changes. You hate interacting with the people. But it's change, and you have to change with your community. And we're blessed with a vibrant and growing community, and we're just lucky to be here and try to provide as good a service as we can for that community.
You do a great job too, Miles. Now, you're talking about the walking horse industry, and we all remember when Soarin' became headlines around here. Just like anything like that, it just gets stronger and stronger. Did you ever really feel like, and I know you've seen many of them. Do you feel like that the horses were being injured during that particular time, or was it something?
Well, it's not so much. I think that it was the accepted way of happening. It's like it is with everything. Mm-hmm. The small percentage of people who abused the system and tried to take advantage of things were ruining it for everybody. And I think that finally it just got to the point where that small percentage did not go away. Mm-hmm. And I think that's when, once the government steps in, then it takes the power out of the people that are running it, and it has changed significantly. And, you know, a small percentage is by all means too many for that thing to, for those things to be happening. And it's a difficult situation, and it's unfortunate for the people who did it honestly.
Yeah.
And we hate to, everybody enjoys it, and it's part of Middle Tennessee.
I hope it has a big comeback. Yeah, I really do.
Yeah, well, I miss it quite a bit.
Do you miss going out into the fields and working with the big animals at all, like you used to? Because I know that you guys were a big, big help to the farmers back during those particular days.
Of course, you miss that kind of thing. And I was pretty much raised in the country a whole lot, and like I say, I miss the people. You miss the people, and you miss that part of the community. And you know, like I say, it's just a difficult thing to see it kind of fade away.
We had some beautiful farms, and I mean, the names of the farmers are legendary around here.
Of course, they're the pillars of the community. That's what made that's what made our county and community what it is today. Yeah. Is that are the people who had that rural background, who worked hard and got up every day and did the best they could. Those mm-hmm. who set the examples for the rest of the area. And in Rutherford County was a very vibrant agricultural county up until the 60s and 70s.
And who would ever thought that we would grow so much that those farms, a lot of them are even non-existent anymore. Talk about the Lane Agricultural Area, you know, that was a big farm at one time.
Oh, huge.
And Myers Parson had a huge place out on 231 South. I mean, just, you could go on and on and on.
Yeah, and you know, you talk to people my parents' age, and mm-hmm. Then they start talking about when the city limits was at the end of Church Street.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, Broad Street and the Nashville Highway hadn't been built yet, and you try to vision it in your eyes how that would have been, and it's just the leaps and the bounds and the growth has been just unbelievable. And you talk about people that have lived here 20 years, they can't believe how it's grown, but it's there. And you miss that, and at the same time, you count yourself fortunate with the economy like it is in the rest of the state and the country, that you're in an area that maybe hasn't been quite as affected by the recession what the rest of the country and the rest of the state does. So we're lucky. We're lucky, and I think that the groundwork that was set by the generation before us is the reason we have the community that we have today.
You're exactly right. Now, when the drought hit this year, how did it affect your business?
I think the heat affects more animal health than anything.
Oh, the 2 weeks where we just had 100 degrees every day or more.
112, but anything above 90 degrees affects the way that humans and animals both act, and people have to use a whole lot of judgment, and they have to keep the water out and watch their dogs when they take them to town to go to the grocery store, and make sure they don't close them up in the cars, and make sure they got plenty of shade, and most of all, plenty of water. And if it gets above that 85, 90 degree mark, you better have a good cool place for them to be, because their body temperature starts off at about 101, 102 degrees, and it's easy for it to get up above 104, 105 right quick. So, and it's still hot. We got all of August and all of September to go through, and with these 90 plus days with 102 heat index, be sure your pet has plenty of cool shelter to get to, and lots of liquids.
Now, what about these big dogs that stay outside? And a lot of them are dogs that probably would be living in cooler weather than what we've got right here.
Well, you know, if the coat of the dog, I usually tell people that have a pet that has the long hair to go ahead and get a haircut in April and August. Just write it down, mm-hmm. and they just do better. The air circulates to the skin. You don't have as many problems with skin infections. The allergies tend to die down. They don't have problems with fleas and ticks. You can detect them when they're away, and that would be your collies and your golden retrievers and mm-hmm. Some of your sled dogs and those types of things that really have a real thick, hot coat.
So dogs are actually affected by allergies just like humans are.
Absolutely. Dogs and cats both. Yeah. Now most of the a lot of the dog allergies are a lot of contact allergies mm-hmm. versus people being a lot of inhalant allergies, but it follows the same pattern the same time of the year. They're about a month or a couple of months out of the year that every two or three dogs that walk in are itching.
I've talked to you about this.
Sneezing and snorting and itching and have a whole lot of trouble with the same types of allergens that we do.
So what do you do with them? You know, how do you treat that?
Well, you know, it's really a question of do you want to treat the disease or do you want to treat the symptoms? Mm-hmm. If you or I get a little hay fever, we take a Benadryl, which is, and it clears it up, and you try to ride out that 2 weeks till you get a good rain and mm-hmm. things tend to get better. And we do the same thing with animals. Or if you want to treat the disease, you have the option of going and getting your dog allergy tested, just like kids do.
Oh, wow.
And you inject the dog with 128 different allergens in the skin and find out which ones they're most sensitive to. And they do the immune serum that they inject once a week, just like you or I would do if we had terrible allergies. So there's a broad spectrum of things that you can do. You know, if you get in poison ivy and you break out real bad and you can't stand it anymore, you go to the doctor and mm-hmm. he gives you a cortisone shot and you get better, but they're not curing you from poison ivy. They're getting rid of the symptoms, so, and that's not without side effects. So if your dog has a whole lot of problem with it, you're having to go to the veterinarian more than three or four times a year to get a cortisone shot because your dog's itching, you might look at treating the disease itself rather than the symptoms to avoid the side effects that go along with the medicine that you treat the symptoms with.
So actually, when you own a small pet, you're raising just like a small child is what you're doing.
The parallels are kind of striking sometimes. It's a big responsibility. And that's another thing that's changed over the last 20 or 30 years.
Yeah.
Pets have become such members of the family that it's you treat them as you would one of your family, which draws it back down to like you would treat your own kids as your responsibility.
Now, on rabies shots, mm-hmm. is that something that should be done on a yearly basis?
Well, Truman, it's the law that they are registered each year. Mm-hmm. There are some vaccines that are approved for 1 year use, and there are some that are approved for 3 year use.
Mm-hmm.
And the state law says that you can vaccinate your dog as the manufacturer recommends, but you do have to register your dog each year with the county and the state. And that is the law. So each year, unless your dog has terrible allergic reactions to vaccines mm-hmm. and all, they are required to be vaccinated each year.
Got a caller on the line? No, we don't have a caller on the line. So I can get back to the rabies thing. I know that we have had at our place three or four times where we've had skunks that were rabid and they are tested. And something I almost never see anymore are red foxes. And I actually saw one about 2 weeks ago running in front of me in the road. And this was during the daytime. Is there anything that people need to watch for when they see these type animals that are acting different or maybe out in the daytime when they're usually nocturnal?
The main thing is kind of keep an eye out for any nocturnal animal that you know always moves at night. And the two that I would recommend or I would caution people to watch out for would be the skunk and raccoons.
Okay.
You know, both of those animals can carry the rabies virus for quite some period of time, up to 6 months, without showing symptoms. And that's what makes it so endemic in their population sometimes.
Hmm.
And eventually, the virus will kill the population down and kind of clean it up, and it builds back up till the virus gets in them again. But there for a while, about half the skunks we were sending in were coming back positive. And a lot of that was because the ones that are killed are either wandering up into the dog pen or are killed during the day. Comes up on a dog or somebody sees it out in the yard during the day. So anything that's nocturnal that's there in the day, it ought to don't try to run and put a box over the top of it. Call rabies control.
Let I don't them, think you're going to do that with a skunk.
Let them handle it, because rabies is a very unforgiving disease.
And it's really seems like it's more harmful to humans than it is any other.
No, it inevitably ends with the demise of the infected individual.
I was 5 years old, and I was clawed by a cat in Nashville, and I had to have the rabies shot, and I can still remember being 5 years old taking those shots in my stomach.
No, they don't do that anymore.
Oh, they don't?
The shots have changed, so it's not as painful and as reactive as it used to be. But that still, you know, it doesn't, you know, any vaccine, there's no guarantee. And so
oh, really?
You really, you know, you really don't want to avoid that exposure if you can. Fortunately, there have been very few cases of in the dog and cat population in the last few years. There have been a couple over the past 10 years of instances where we've had dogs and cats with rabies, but it's been real unusual. That being said, there's always any warm-blooded animal can become infected.
Now, how did they originally become infected? Is it by mosquitoes, or how do they?
Usually,
how does it happen?
It's through the saliva from a bite.
Hmm.
That's the most common way. One of the, and I don't know if it still holds true, but several years ago, that there. For some reason, the rabies virus in some species isn't secreted in the saliva like it is in others, and some species are more resistant. You know, you never see a possum with rabies. You never hear much of a squirrel with rabies. Some seem to be more resistant to it than others. It just
well, the squirrels are shot first,
but
and the possums are run over in the road.
Right. some of the species seem to be more resistant than others.
That's amazing.
And you know, the calves and the horses that I've seen with the disease before have all been from skunks. Generally, just the skunks out wandering around in the pasture, and it's usually a calf or a young horse will go up and sniff the skunk, and the skunk bites the horse or the calf on the nose, and they end up developing the disease. And it's those have been the ones that I've seen.
Yeah, I remember one of the skunks that we ended up shooting out at our place was over. George Ann Lynch and Tommy had a place out there right next to ours, and we called them because the skunk was heading over there toward where their horses were. And I think my wife shot at it five or six times. Somebody finally ended up shooting it.
Yeah.
But how much time do you have if you're bitten and yeah, I guess if you're bit by any type of animal, you need to go to
need
the
to
vet.
Immediately. You need to seek treatment and advice from your physician immediately. There's always been the thing 10 days, 2 weeks. But, you know, one day, 2 days is the best way to go with it.
Yeah, I don't think I'd want to take a chance. No, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Miles Lane.
Next is the Better Business Focus with Terry Page.
Are you searching for a full-service, one-stop-shop contracting and construction team to repair your damaged residential or commercial roofing system? Fessler Home Improvement and Construction is a fully licensed and insured company with a solid rating from the Better Business Bureau, and we're here to help. Call us at 217-4907. We also specialize in water damage and remodeling. Call 217-4907 for a free, no-obligation inspection. Fessler Home Improvement and Construction, 217-4907.
Have you ever thought about who decides if a product or service meets the customer satisfaction test? Who decides if the business performs better than others? It's not the business, but the customer. Our business community knows their customers decide if they have met the test. Customers, when you have a concern, don't go away. Give the business a chance to resolve your issues. This is Terry Page with your local Better Business Bureau.
Okay, Jose, Tex-Mex cuisine.
Hola, amigos. This is Sergio from Okay, Jose. I'm the manager. Come join us. Come try us out. We would like to earn your business. We make everything fresh from scratch. Come go and join us for a good quality meal.
Here are today's specials at Okay, Jose. It's Taco Tuesday, 99 cents all day.
Stop by Okay, Jose on South Rutherford next to Walmart for 99 cent Taco Tuesday. Again, that's on South Rutherford next to Walmart.
Tennessee Radio Network News, I'm Kristen Thubert. A former Army recruiter has been sentenced to three life sentences without the possibility of parole in the deaths of a Manchester mother and her two young sons. Matthew Perkins pleaded guilty in the September 2010 deaths. Investigators found the three bodies stuffed in trash bags inside a bedroom closet of the victim's home. An East Tennessee Olympian is receiving hometown support.
Claire Donahue is a current member of the U.S. Olympic swim team competing in the London Games. The Lenoir City native is receiving lots of support from Pigeon Forge, where her father has been general manager of Huck Finn's Catfish Restaurant for 16 years.
TRN's Craig Stevens. Nashville and Memphis are two of the deadliest cities for young drivers. A Centers for Disease Control study ranked Nashville third worst, followed by Memphis at number four. The report says about a quarter of all road fatalities are ages 15 to 24. Local driving instructors say a reason for that high rate is that the state does not require driver's education.
Online only Absolute Auction. Handyman Special at 14591 Highway 99 in Eagleville. It sits on 6 acres with a nice country home and outbuilding. Go to ReliantRealtyAuctions.com to bid now through Thursday, August 2nd at 7 p.m. Online only Absolute Auction. The home and property will be sold as is where is. Name your price at ReliantRealtyAuctions.com now through Thursday, August 2nd on a
this
country
home. This is Bill
home.
Bowman, property assessor of Rutherford County. In 2008, I ran my campaign on being fair and honest, and since that campaign, nothing has changed. I continue to be fair, honest, and treat everyone equal. I believe in Rutherford County, believe in giving back to the community. I'm running again and asking for your vote for property assessor. I love my job and serving you. Please vote for me as your property assessor for Rutherford County. I'm Bill Boner, and I approve this message.
Visiting with Dr. Rishi Saxena, board-certified cardiologist. Dr. Saxena, what makes the 64-slice CT scan better than heart catheterization or the treadmill stress test?
This is non-invasive, so you could find the information without putting any needle in the body, then act on it to cut down your risk of heart attack and death from happening.
Before your doctor does a stress test or heart catheterization, call 896-4800. Dr. Rishi Saxena, the only certified physician in heart CT in this area.
WeatherEye.
A check of the forecast now with staff meteorologist Mandy Valuber. 82 degrees, sunny skies right now. Let's get an update on the forecast for the morning and the rest of the day. Hey, Mandy.
Well, for the afternoon hours, Brian, we are expecting lots of sunshine with a high near 100 degrees. We'll have an east wind between 5 and 10 miles per hour. Slight chance for showers and storms during the overnight tonight. Clear skies and a low of 69. For your Wednesday, spotty showers and thunderstorms, otherwise sunshine, 96 degrees for your high. Thursday, lots of sunshine. We're at 95 degrees for your high temperature. I'm WeatherEye staff meteorologist Andy Felliver.
Radar clear right now. No problems out there for you. Today's birthday cake winner, Annie Miller. Congratulations to Annie. She receives a birthday cake from our friends at Junior's Foodland and our WGNS Good Neighbor of the Day, Miss Sherry James, who receives a beautiful bouquet of flowers from Ryan's Flower Shop. Now back to the Truman Show and his very special guest, Mr. Miles Lane.
And And welcome back with Miles Lane. And we want to let you know that this part of his show is brought to you by At Home Care. And when you and your family members need assistance for a day, week, or indefinitely, Home Care is ready to sit down with you and help devise a practical plan to meet your family's needs. Their company is different than any other you see in the local marketplace because they're owner operated by longtime Murfreesboro resident Melissa Warren. That means they're hands-on and involved in your family members' care and satisfaction all day, every day. They provide their clients what they want most, to remain in their own homes as independently as possible with their own family possessions, neighbors, and schedules. What they do can't be learned from a book. It comes from the heart, and they truly do care. Give them a call at 713-4639, and their place of business is 237 Castlewood Drive, and you can also reach them on the internet, www.athomecaretennessee.com. You know, Miles, you are one of these people, you can tell, that you really enjoy your work, and I enjoy talking to you about some of the things that's going on. What in the world made you get into this business to start with?
Well, Truman, like everybody, you always wonder when you're younger, what do I want to spend the rest of my life doing? And actually, with the time I spent in the country when I was growing up, I spent a lot of time hunting, fishing, mm-hmm. in the outdoors, and I went to University of Tennessee as an undergraduate and asked myself, what do I want to do? And I was torn between wildlife management and veterinary medicine. And the line, I went to two meetings that day during orientation, and I've got to tell on myself a little bit here. The last 6 weeks of high school, I rose to the great grade point average of 3.0. So I had average when I got in. I sat in that advisor's room, and the first thing out of his mouth is, if you don't have a 3.7 grade point average, there's not much chance you'll get in veterinary school.
Wow.
So I headed on over to the Wildlife Management and Forestry Department. Started studying about trees and wild boars. And after the first year, I discovered that the job line to wildlife management and forestry was somewhat longer than the rest were. And the great state of Tennessee decided they were going to open their own veterinary school. And therefore, mm-hmm. there weren't going to be but seven. But 20 people came out of the state of Tennessee, went to Auburn, Ohio State,
right.
and University of Georgia, and Tuskegee. And that they were going to take 60 people the first couple of years. So I said, you know, I might as well just throw my hat in the ring. And I struggled around for a couple of years and decided that I'd probably put a little bit more time into studying, and things worked out, and I really enjoyed one good thing about my occupation is something different every day, whether it's your patients or your clients.
Mm-hmm.
And there's very seldom a day that I don't get up and not enjoy going to work. And you know,
you really do work in an ideal job.
I do, and I've been awful blessed, and I've had a lot of support from family and partners and staff, and it's just been a great time. Just a great occupation.
I imagine going to vet school was really an enlightening experience because you have to deal with so many different things.
It is, and it's just so interesting. There's a ton of information to absorb all at one time, and but it's a very rewarding curriculum, and for the most part, everything you learn, you end up using,
mm-hmm.
In one way or the other. Now, at the time, it doesn't seem that way, but after you get out and you look back, they teach you how to find things,
mm-hmm.
and you may not remember everything that you were taught, but you know where to find it. And it's one of the great things about the occupation too is that we still get to practice some practical medicine.
Mm-hmm.
One of the hardest things about it is that you have some clients on one end of the spectrum that if it's costs more than $10, and that I can't go there. Mm-hmm. And you got some people on the other end of the spectrum that go down with the ship no matter what, and mm-hmm. I don't care what it takes. And you got to be able to offer that whole spectrum of clientele your best effort with what they give you. But determining where that is sometimes challenging. So, and it's and it differs, and it's more and more as the demographic of the area changes, people look at that pet or look at that animal in the house as more than just a possession, as a family, and they want to be able to offer the best care that's available. And we try to do that, and if there's something that we don't have, we know where to find somebody that that can help them. There are all types of veterinary specialists anymore, mm-hmm. veterinary orthopedic surgeons, veterinary ophthalmologists, veterinary dermatologists, and internal medicine specialists, and they're just right down the road in Nashville. And so if you have that difficult case, or if you have one that takes a little bit more diagnostics than what you have available, then you've got somewhere that's convenient to, you've got somewhere that's convenient to go that is available to everybody anymore.
You're basically a family physician. As you say, there are people that are specialized in some types of surgery and things like that.
Sure.
But you have your doctorate degree basically in animal science, I guess, and plus the medical part.
Yeah, my bachelor's degree is in animal science.
Okay.
Then you got a doctor of veterinary medicine degree after mm-hmm. that. And you can continue to further your education after that mm-hmm. if you want to become board certified in a certain specialty. So, you know, you do an internship and residency just like the...
That's what I was going to say. You start with Dr. Brogel, right? Mm-hmm. And then you begin your internship, I guess, when you started working with him.
You get out and hit the ground running.
And it's a continuing education because medicine changes constantly.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, you're required to get 20 hours a year of continued classroom education and to try to keep you on top of things and what's available. And it's it changes each year.
I know that you have to spend a lot of time because of the pets, the love of the owner to the pet. Mm-hmm. And when something comes across that's going to be extremely costly, maybe the dog has cancer and is going to have a lot of treatment. How difficult is that to work with the owners and explain that and as they're trying to figure out what they're going to do, because some of them may not even be able to afford those type surgeries?
It is difficult. Each case is an individual. We always have just tried to do the best we can to offer the best service that we can and educate the client as to what's available and just put it out there in an honest manner.
Mm-hmm.
Some things, if you know, multiple fractures or cataracts or that are going to require 2 or 3 hours worth of surgery are expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you just have to let them know that the amount of education and the amount of and the quality of service that you're giving is what it costs.
Mm-hmm.
Just communication and honesty. That's the best two things I know to use in explaining to somebody, and no matter what their situation is, and it tends to work itself out. And
don't have an easy job.
Be upfront, be honest, and it's not, people aren't going to be happy always,
mm-hmm.
but that's the way out. If you're honest and you're upfront, then that always is the best path to take.
Now, all the preventive things that you guys do, and you send out cards usually once a year to the pet owners, and you tell them all the things that particular pet needs to have for their health-wise. Mm-hmm. Is how many things, say a dog, how many mm-hmm. things would a dog have to do on a yearly basis I mean, we're talking about things like heartworms and sure. stuff like that.
The average pet owner makes 2 to 3 visits a year to the veterinarian.
Okay.
You want at least one to get caught up on your rabies shot and keep your dog legal. Mm-hmm. Generally, it takes 2 for good preventative care. Heartworm tests, rabies vaccinations, distemper, hepatitis, parainfluenza, parvovirus, coronavirus. Bordetella, which is the dreaded kennel cough that everybody always runs into when they have to board their animal, take it to the groomer, those types of things, which is really kind of like the common cold in people. Heartworm tests, fleas and ticks, heartworm preventative, which there are several options now as far as keeping your dog parasite free and mm-hmm. with the fleas and ticks. And it would take a 20-minute spiel for me to go over them all, but be sure and talk to your veterinarian about what's available out there and what options you have as far as heartworm preventative goes. That yearly good physical is, again, hearkening back to us. You know, we need that good yearly physical. Your pet does as well. And there are several different vaccine regimens that you can that are applied to each dog, because each one's an individual. Whether they're an outside dog or whether they're always indoors, whether mm-hmm. they never go anywhere, or whether they're going to the bark park every day or the greenway every day, you want to be sure that they're covered for the things that they might be exposed to in those environments. And those are where, you know, whether I give the kennel cough vaccine, whether I vaccinate for distemper and hepatitis every year, mm-hmm. You have to tailor that plan to each individual animal. And there's arguments all over the place about how often you should vaccinate your dog, and mm-hmm. is there more risk versus benefit as far as protection goes. And again, you need to leave that to your veterinarian and to the individual dog. But that once yearly good physical is very important. Blood work, and just like us, when we hit middle age, yeah, I was 40 or 45 before I went and said, look, I just want a good physical. That good baseline blood work when they get up 5 or 6 years old is a good place to get that done, and helps when they get older if there is a problem. They've got something that we can say, this is where this dog is normally. You know, he may have an elevated liver enzyme or kidney enzyme or something mm-hmm. that might tip us off to early disease where we can do something about it. And it's all about getting as much quality time as you can out of your companion.
Have you seen the first part of this year? Of course, we had a lot of rain and it was warm, and the ticks were everywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, you couldn't go outside without having them. After the drought,
it kind
haven't
of dried
seen
up,
any.
No, there's no rhyme or reason to it this year because there was no winter to speak of. And we were talking, and usually the last week of February, we start seeing some ticks. And everybody was going, man, we're going to get killed with ticks this year. And it's just really not been, now I'm knocking on wood, everybody out there, that they don't show up tomorrow in droves. But we hadn't had as bad a tick problem this year as we usually do.
Well, it was so hot and dry.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, they were gone.
I know. And it just, like I said, there's no rhyme or reason to it.
Now, when a homeowner or a pet owner comes in, and you know that this dog is a biting dog, and you were talking about that earlier, about some of the dogs that you would expect to be the worst are some of the easiest to handle.
And you know, everybody always gets in trouble for labeling breeds as, and I'll leave it to the listeners out there to look at the lists of different breeds of dogs and the number of reported dog bites. I think that you know, some of the working dogs, the protective type breeds, are going to have a little bit more tendency to be a little bit more aggressive. In other words, a Rottweiler or a Doberman Pinscher that's bred for protection and working dogs is going to be genetically more prone to aggressive behavior than a basset hound. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I've got basset hounds that'll sure take your finger off if you're not careful. So to put them all in one group is kind of unfair, because I have some very sweet German Shepherds.
I love very sweet
Char Pays. I have very sweet Akitas. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I have very sweet Pit Bulldogs. At the same time, you have to know that the tendency is sometimes there, and usually you can tell. And some of the Dynamite comes in small packages. Mm-hmm. You know, the Chihuahuas and the Dachshunds,
Cocker Spaniels,
and it's there, but. You know, it's just a matter of taking your time with the animal and posing as little a threat as you can, and getting some information from the owner and taking it and going with it from there.
Do you think maybe the dogs feed off of the owner's personality? Because the pit bull seems to be the one dog that everybody wants to eliminate, because there have been numerous cases of mauling and actually death caused by those dogs.
Sure, and you know, and those cases are out there. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times that those animals have been the background, the upbringing, the training that they've had has promoted that kind of, you know, the fact that they're not neutered. A lot of times promotes those types of situations to develop. It's unfortunate. You know, the pit bull is a bull terrier, Staffordshire Terrier, boxer type cross. And that's, mm-hmm. those are the origins of the breed. And those are, you know, terriers by nature are a little bit more aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
I've got some that'll jump up in my lap when I work on them, and it's appearance too. It automatically evokes some fear sometimes. Look at some of them that have a head as big as a gallon jug, and you look mm-hmm. at them and you just go, "Oh my goodness!" And they come up and go, "Hey, you know."
They seem to detect fear, don't they?
Yeah, sure.
So you have to maintain that.
Try to come in and be as easy as you can, because they really lots of dogs can sure tell.
Have you been zapped a few times?
A few times. No debilitating injuries, but several tetanus shots.
You know, I've always been a dog lover, and I know there are cat lovers out there.
Sure.
But cats seem to be a little bit more aloof than the dog breed. The dogs seem to be the type that they just want to love the people that are around them, and it's more of a, I don't know,
no, cats,
family type thing.
Cats get, you know, there is the aloof cat, but cats get kind of a bum rap sometimes.
Oh, they do?
Yeah, there are some very affectionate cats that play fetch and are happy as clams to see people. Does that not mean there's some aloof ones? Yeah, they're aloof ones, but they're also dogs that bite. So uh-huh. you know, it's both. Cats are easy keepers,
uh-huh.
not as low maintenance, don't tend to cause as many problems with tearing the house up. So it's what you're looking for. It's what suits the individual. And you're right, the pit a lot of times is a reflection of the owner.
And we have a caller on the line. Caller, welcome aboard with Dr. Miles Lane.
Miles, you've got to tell the audience about your experience with Rascal. You can't get off the air without telling that. Okay?
Okay. Are you talking about the raccoon Rascal?
Yes!
Back to my wildlife days. Rascal was a raccoon that, and this is totally illegal anymore as far as keeping wild animals without permits. But mm-hmm. back when I was a young man, I had a raccoon, and we called him Rascal, and he was about half domesticated, and caused quite a terror around the neighborhood while I had him, and probably there are several different tales I could tell on Rascal, but probably the best one was he would go on 2 months hiatuses away from his cage and come back 2 months later, and actually one time knocked the screen out of my bedroom and jumped up on the bed one morning with me. Kind of like, I'm back home, kind of hungry, can you give me a little something? Mm-hmm. The lady that lives across the street, or across the yard from where my parents live now, always raised cactuses in her garage. Had a myriad of cactuses, and a cacti, I suppose I should say. And Rascal would get out and dig her cactuses up. So I wasn't on too good of terms with the lady across the yard, and she fussed and fighted about. But for some reason, he really loved going over there. And when he had gone missing about a month, and I got the phone call one afternoon. Miles, come, that your coon is in my bathtub. And I went, that can't be, Celine. What? I know he's underneath my bathtub. And I said, I hadn't seen him in a month. He said, but he's here. He's under my house. And so I took a piece of peppermint candy, which is what his weakness was, and I looked underneath my neighbor's house, and where her bathtub was, there was a little spot that had wet rotted underneath the bathtub, and he had crawled up and was inside of her bathtub while she was taking a shower. And he grabbed the toggle that you know, let your water drain out, and was pulling on the toggle, so my neighbor's toggle was going up and down inside the bathtub while she was getting a shower, and she had no idea what was going on, but she figured it out right fast that the raccoon was living inside of her bathtub and doing quite well, I might add. So we had to fix the cage again, keep Rascal in, and he lived to be, well, I think he was 13, and caused my mother quite some consternation of the first night that I had. I brought my future wife home, and we were sitting on the couch one time, and the raccoon was under the couch, and my wife had a Hershey bar and was eating the Hershey bar. I didn't know the raccoon was under the couch, and that raccoon came out from under the couch and grabbed that Hershey bar from my wife and ran back without her knowing that the raccoon was even under the couch, and it made quite a hubbub there for a while. So he got me, we had some rather fun times with that, but I would not recommend them as pets to anyone. And it actually took me about 3 or 4 before I ever got one that I was able to even come close to taming like you would think of a dog or cat. So it's that was definitely a teenager's or a young man's game. It's nothing you want to keep up with, but it we had a lot of fun with it. It was a priceless moment. Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Dr. Miles Lane.
Next is the Better Business Focus with Terry Page.
Quality Tire and Service on Rideout Lane, just off Kaysen Lane, has built their reputation on years of quality, affordable work. From tire repair, rotation, and new tires, air conditioning, cooling system maintenance, to brakes, oil change, and transmission maintenance, Quality Tire and Service prides themselves on customer satisfaction and great service. Quality Tire and Service on Rideout Lane, just off Kaysen Lane. At Quality Tire and Service, the customer is always number one.
Being an ethical business is the same as being an ethical person. Do the right thing. The same moral code of values and principles we base our decisions on should be the same used in business. Customers and businesses will always thrive in a marketplace that's based on honesty and trust. BBB members make a pledge to do the right thing. This is Terry Page with your local Better Business Bureau.
Great time for fishing here in Middle Tennessee. This is Randy of Murfreesboro Outdoors inviting all y'all to come by and pick up your supplies. We've got rods and reels and line, artificial baits.
Murfreesboro Outdoors on Northwest Broad Street.
Like you're going to Smyrna, we're half a mile from Thompson Lane on the right.
I'm B.J. Smudman. I'm running for road superintendent of Rutherford County. As a road superintendent, I'll put my experience and leadership skills to work to maintain safe roads while being cost efficient. I have 14 years experience in road building and maintenance. I'm a lifelong resident of Rutherford County. I'm the most reliable and qualified candidate for road superintendent. I'm B.J. Smudman. I'd appreciate your vote for road superintendent. This message is paid for by B.J. Smudman campaign. I'm B.J. Smudman, and I approve this message.
It's baseball season, and anyone who follows the game knows a good manager doesn't send all of his batters to the plate with instructions to swing for the fences to win the game. I'm Lee Colvin with Edward Jones, and we know that consistent performance over time is what increases the return on an investor's savings. You don't have to take high risks to earn potentially attractive returns. Call me, Lee Colvin, at 907-7056. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Roscoe Brown. For 70 years, we've had one goal, to give you the very best in home comfort and value. The same way of thinking lives on today with Roscoe's son and grandson. And why we say there's a little bit of Roscoe in every job we do. Turn to the experts at Roscoe Brown for an energy-efficient carrier system with rebates, tax credits, and monthly payments as low as $199. Call 888-MY-ROSCOE.
Your friend since 1940, Roscoe Brown is who you trust.
It's the Truman Show, a look at the people and news shaping Rutherford County with Truman Jones.
And welcome back with Dr. Miles Lane. And we have to let you know, and we want to let you know, that the last part of this show was brought to you by Gordon Ralston Photography. And that's 315 Hickerson Drive in Murfreesboro. You can reach them at 396-8776. Pull them up on the internet, www.gordonralstonphoto.com. And Al Gordon, a master craftsman photographer, and Larry Ralston, certified craftsman, both hometown guys, are the most awarded studio in the Middle Tennessee area, operating a full-service photographic studio in Murfreesboro. They specialize in weddings, high school seniors, and family portraits. Their work is classic yet current with a creative edge. Al was even awarded the Grand Award for the best wedding image in the world. Gordon Ralston, they look forward to meeting you, and they will treat you like family. You know, Miles, this has been a great show. I've really enjoyed it. I could sit here and talk to you for hours.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and you know, I guess probably the worst thing about you and I knowing each other, when we're over at the Y, we end up talking more than we end up working out.
Yeah, I got to work on that. But, you know, they talk about recovery time. It's always good to get recovered between your weight sets there.
So. Yeah, but I don't think we're supposed to recover for 30 minutes in between each set.
30-minute recovery time is pretty good, isn't it, true?
Well, it's been fun, and I'd love to have you back on, because there's a lot of things that we can discuss, and there's no more favorite subject for me than talking about the animals. And
everybody enjoys animals.
They really do. Yeah, really, I don't care how mean everybody you are, you still enjoy
they
animals.
Really do.
We will see you guys tomorrow. And tomorrow we have John Blankenship, and it's going to be a crazy fun day. We'll see you at 9 a.m.
Take care, Truman.